Manifestation. That's what Joseph Gallenberger does. His earlier book, Liquid Luck, talks about incredible luck. We're going to talk about that. And his latest work is called Heaven is for Healing. We'll talk about that as well when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie with you. Dr. Joseph Gallenberger back with us, clinical psychologist with 30-plus years experience as a therapist. In 1992, he began to investigate psychokinesis, which is the ability to influence matter through non-physical means. And Dr. Gallenberger is a senior trainer at the Monroe Institute. He trains a spectrum of Monroe programs and developed the Institute's highly successful MC Squared program, which teaches psychokinesis, healing, manifestation. He has developed Sync Creation, which is a course in manifestation, which is the home study version of the MC Squared program. Noted the CDs out. We play them occasionally. We're going to play another one later on tonight. And his books include Liquid Luck, which we'll talk about in his new one called Heaven is for Healing, which we'll talk about later on in the program as well. Joseph, welcome back.
Thank you, George. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, and I hope you are too. You're busy as ever, I noticed.
Yep, one arm paper hanger thing.
I love it. When you put together Liquid Luck, was that based on experimentation? What was that got you to come up with that concept?
Well, George, as I mentioned on other shows, working with Monroe Institute, in high meditative states, began to see that we could affect physical matter reality with our energy and our intent. And that took me on a long exploration through several universities, doing PK experiments, and then out to Las Vegas for experimenting on the slot machines and dice tables with being able to affect reality, because that's such a great feedback system. And within that, then began to teach that. And now I guess since I talked to you about 2 years ago, now we've done 85 of those Inner Vegas Adventure workshops out in Vegas.
85?
Yeah. And so all that's going along, but the, you know, for many people, going to a three-day workshop is pretty extensive. And so I was looking for something that would give people a real taste and a genuine experience of seeing, quote, their luck shift or their ability to affect reality shift. And so I came up with the idea of this, doing a meditation CD using the most advanced kinds of brainwave training we have that could trigger people into a state where all of a sudden what they thought would manifest a lot better on the positive. And so Liquid Luck first came out as a CD, and within days of its coming out, I began to get reports of people selling houses in an hour that had been on market for months, people in getting inventions going, solving engineering problems, finding soulmates, all kinds of positive changes. And so after hearing those tales, I thought it was important enough to write a book about it, and that's where the Liquid Luck book came from.
What creates that kind of luck? We manifest it. Do we do it to ourselves? Are we just tapping into something? And I have found, Joseph, that I've done my own experimenting. If somebody is in a negative mood, the luck goes away. It doesn't happen. Why is that?
Yes. So, yes, I think we do create a reality a lot more than we think we do. In most situations, the feedback's kind of slow. If we want to, you know, we could think negatively for a week and then maybe we started feeling cold symptoms or something like that. In the Vegas casino, the feedback is often within seconds. And in a psychokinesis experiment, we can measure that so that to do well on those PK experiments, I've been working a lot in the last 2 years since I talked to you with the University of Virginia on this. You enter into a highly positive, open-hearted state with a terrific focus on what you would like, but then also the dances, then you have to also let go and surrender. And sometimes that's very challenging. Say somebody went to the doc and they said, you have a lump on your arm, and Monday we're going to biopsy it, and over the weekend you want to get rid of that lump. you know, you're facing the fear of maybe this could be something really serious. So nowadays we do have techniques to move a person out of ego, out of negativity, into positive energy quickly. And when that happens, that's when you tend to see the psychokinesis or the positive manifestations, even healings at times. So it is a question of, you know, a lot of people define psychokinesis as affecting matter with your mind, and I don't like that definition.
Right, right.
The mind is sort of the steering wheel, like of a car. It sets the direction of where you want to go, but the car goes nowhere without gas. And to me, what I found the best fuel or gas for this whole thing is the energy of real high-flowing, high love, not the personal kind of puppy love type of thing, but a real agape or compassion for yourself and all others, because that takes you out of ego, connects you with everything in the physical world, but it also connects you with spirit. And when that happens, then you got your PowerPoint.
When you wrote The Liquid Luck, you also wrote Inner Vegas, of course.
Yes.
You keyed in, obviously, on Vegas. Why? Was it because it was easier to track?
Yes, I was looking after going to university labs and seeing psychokinesis at statistical significant levels, way above, you know, they'll release a drug at, if it's 100 to 1 by chance that it's effective. We are getting results 30, 40,000 to 1 by chance. And so that really excited me as a scientist, because I really like to study this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked around for a place where I could get a black belt in PK, if you will, looking for where would we know exactly what's going on statistically, and we know that for dice and slot machines. And it's guaranteed to be neutral and, you know, not a rigged game. And that the feedback there was so quick. As I mentioned, say I might go up to a room and meditate on getting a royal flush in hearts. And
that would be nice.
Get it in two pulls. The chances of that are like 100.
Astronomical.
One, yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you were able to do that, what did you deduce? What did you conclude?
Well, that we are really interesting creatures, that we have a lot more power than we thought we did to form our reality if things are in alignment correctly. And I saw it as a very positive psychological and spiritual thing, because, again, any greed, fear, ego, performance anxiety, any of those things would squash this. And nothing would happen. So it kept training you toward a more enlightened way of living, where you would be living from your heart in the here now, fully grounded to the earth, meaning connected. A lot of us don't even want to be here. It's a stressful planet. And then also connected with spirit. So it became a yoga for me. That was one of the things. I said, wow, this is both fun and exciting, but it seems highly positive. The next big discovery is I could teach it. And other people found it a very positive skill to learn, too. Where in the past, some people say who've bent metal have claimed to be really special or be abducted by aliens before they could do it, those kind of things. I think it is a real natural human ability. But natural doesn't necessarily mean easy in mm-hmm. the sense of sleep is natural, right, George?
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
But if you want to go to sleep, usually you have that intention, then you let go of the intention, you think of something else, and then you're asleep. But if you had only 2 hours before a flight to get a little rest, you probably wouldn't sleep very well because you'd be under pressure. And PK doesn't respond to pressure, so it can be a natural skill, but one where you have to be very unself-conscious, unpressured in order to do it. And that's kind of a nice thing for business creativity, relationships, other kind of things, where you have very exciting goals and you really, really want these things to happen. And at the same time, then you have to lay back and let it flow. If you push it, it doesn't work.
Vegas was built by losers, not winners.
That's true.
And most people who go to Vegas end up losing. Why is that?
A couple of things go on, George. One is we find that not only this high energy is needed, but you can't have any limiting beliefs. And most people go out with the belief, I'm going on vacation and I can afford to lose $20 a day or whatever it is, $200 a day. And so that's exactly what they create. That comes into play. Usually in gaming, the person with the most money wins and the casino has a lot more money than you do. So if you go out with $20 expecting to win $200, you're going to hit plus minus 20 before you hit the $200, you'll probably be out. If you went out with $200 saying, I'd like to win $20, not being greedy, then more people would be successful. But the main thing is this energy deal where folks are, it triggers fear, it triggers greed. Folks would get pretty anxious about the possibility of loss. All of that works against them coming home with the money. And we kind of do the opposite in the Vegas Adventure Workshops. We spend a whole day in meditation. We learn what we're doing. We support each other as a team. All these things take you out of your own ego. And so we almost flip what most people do out there. And so we have very different results than most people.
How do you know what greedy is? Because what if, you know, you want to win $1,000 and you end up $1,000, and so you say, oh, geez, I can win $2,000. I mean, at what point is it too greedy?
With greed, there's usually a tension. You win that first $1,000, say, and if you're filled with gratitude and joy, I would continue with what we call a stop loss, much like in
stock investing. Yeah.
Trailing stop loss. So say I'm up 800, I would stop at 600. If I hit 6, I'd be out of there. If I get up to the 1,000, you know, then I'd stop loss at 9 as I get up.
So you just keep moving it.
Yeah. So you can let a good run, and yet you're not going, oh boy, maybe I've lost 5 of the 100 of that, but I know it's going to change back and la, 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 la. That's where you get in trouble. And so the lack of greed comes in when you are able to walk away feeling really good about each wave of abundance. If that's $20 or if that's $2,000.
Is that just smart money management, or is that something supernatural that we all have?
There's, at least the way I do things, there is a money management to it, but that ability to let energy flow with this very deep sense of gratitude and open heart, then we get into the psychic thing. Frankly, George, most of the time when I'm sitting at a slot machine, I'm thinking of all of the loved ones that have now passed over. And I'm sitting there in a very deep, heart-open connection, talking to my mom and dad who passed many years ago, brothers, and feeling, you know, that is the most wonderful thing about sitting there, and the money is sort of gravy on top of that. And with that kind of attitude, you're not in greed. You got your psychic ability flowing, When it feels like the lights start to turn dim, or you start to cool off, or that heart energy starts to close down, you know it's time to move on. So one of the things I've done with lots of the CDs I developed, like Abundance Waterfall and Liquid Luck and all of those, to just give people devices, and I use those at the machines as well, just to sit there in great joy and let things run, both on dice or slot machines.
You had a personal situation, which we'll talk about after the break, which was the impetus for you writing Heaven is for Healing.
Yes.
In most people's cases, how do they apply this to their life? Not necessarily running off to Vegas to make money, but just for themselves to make their life a little more fruitful.
Yes. So, same principles. Many of us are not fully here. We're distracted by worry about the future, guilt about the past, those kind of things. So we're wanting, you know, a person to move into that present moment, having a feeling of great gratitude for the blessings in their life already, having a real clear idea of what they would like to create or manifest. And then the same kind of principles of having high energy, which you might get through meditation, being out in the beauty of nature, even volunteer work that helps somebody else and creates you know, good feelings back and forth, all of those kind of things that raise your energy, then when you apply to, gee, I would like to do a creative project at work or get a raise or change jobs or find some new friends or a life partner, then you're in a much better state for it to get, quote, spooky, where not only our physical timing is really good about where we are and when we are, but some of the psychic gifts can come into play. Intuition, help with from the other side, if you will. The universe loves to cooperate with us when we're in this kind of a state. I always say this or something better. You know, I wanted to go to Paris to take my wife. She'd never been. And in this high energy state, by the end of the day, I had an offer to teach in France.
Jeez.
And I thought, gee, I'd like to go first class round trip for free. By the end of the day, I had free tickets round trip.
Wow. Now, some people would say it's synchronicity. You would say otherwise.
It's partly, you know, with that, you mentioned liquid luck. One of the things we do is increase synchronicity and serendipity by these high energies and positive beliefs. Because those is one of the ways that the universe really can talk to us and support us well. So you do have this dance between psychokinesis, which might be more actively creating reality, and using your intuition to know when the timing is right, and then all this connection with spirit that brings in grace, if you will, in the form of synchronicity, serendipity, things like that.
Joseph Gallenberger with us, of course. His latest work is called Heaven is for Healing, which we'll talk about in just a moment. We're also talking about Liquid Luck, Inner Vegas as well. And when you experimented with students, how many did you bring initially?
Well, when I go out to do Inner Vegas Adventure, the class is quite small. We do 16 maximum, usually with my wife and I as co-trainers, because that's how many will fit around a dice table.
Right.
And we get the tables reserved just for ourselves. When I teach up at Monroe Institute, the program that came out of the Vegas work called MC Squared or Manifestation Creation Squared, we can go up in their facility up to 24. I've done it bilingually in Canada with 35 people. But all of those are fairly small groups.
Are they all concentrating on the same thing and for the good of the total?
Yes, we go for great cohesion of target and dice. For example, we might have the idea of getting doubles together. So even if your favorite number is six, you put that aside during the group sessions so that we're all focused on the same targets. We find that very important. And it's the next level, I think, of human development. Many of us are getting our acts together individually pretty well, but if 14 people try to order a pizza, it's a real painful thing. Everybody wants a different topping, you know?
That's true. Joseph, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and talk about your latest work, Heaven is for Healing, which, again, is tapping into this force to do some incredible things. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Joseph Gallenberger. His latest work is called Heaven is for Healing. And, of course, there's some personal encounters here that had him write it. But, Joseph, tell us a little bit about just the title by itself, Heaven is for Healing.
George, that was coming off of what most people in our culture have been taught about someone who suicides is they may go into an everlasting hell kind of a situation through traditional religion. And also in the New Age area, a lot of times it's pretty heavy too of, oh, if you do something like that, you have to come back and do everything over again, even in worse circumstances. And in my own life, there had been a suicide that touched me deeply, and I saw my mother, raised Catholic, now have to think that her beloved child was going to be in hell for all eternity. And I went on an exploration of this and instead found incredible compassion on the other side when somebody does choose to take their life. And so the title came from the idea that suicide is not a good thing to do, definitely. There's lots of issues that it generates that you have to overcome on the other side, if you will, but you are met with great compassion, and there is potential to heal. And so the title, Heaven is for Healing, comes from that.
It's a topic that not a lot of people talk about.
That's correct.
Are they afraid of it? What is it about that word, suicide, that just scares a lot of people?
Well, again, culturally, we have a very heavy idea. From Roman times, they'd take your family's property. That went into the Middle Ages. I was down on a ghost tour in New Orleans, and they said in the 1700s, I think it was, when somebody suicided, they would church would take the body, torture it like an Inquisition, and then cut it up into pieces and feed it to the alligators in unconsecrated ground so demons could torture it for all eternity. That's the culture we come from. So there's a lot of shame, guilt, involved. The society does have a role, a legitimate role in discouraging this, because, George, you know, we have, sadly, a few weeks ago here, an 8-year-old commit suicide after he had been bullied in school. So there is a thought that, you know, many times suicide may be a decision made on impulse for all the wrong reasons, for example. Yet it does carry a range all the way till I have 2 weeks left to live with terminal cancer and I want to avoid the final pain, to people like my brother who went through decades of grinding depression, not being able to find work, physical pain in his body, and just wore out his ability to fight through all of that. So we judge this, I think, way harshly. We should consider it a very serious issue, but burying it doesn't help. In Europe, there's an explosion of suicide, and there is here too, but the European approach seems to be to create centers to help people who are feeling this way, and also to help loved ones who have experienced the suicide, so that it's much more open there. My web designer lives in California, about half of the year in Ireland. He says the approach over in Europe is very different. Here, frankly, George, you know, you have a good bit of courage bringing me on today. I've been on hundreds of radio shows about my other topics, and people are very enthused about having me on. With this topic, most people have declined to even bring it up.
And they do that. There's a couple reasons, of course. It's a very sad topic.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't want to be reminded of things like that, and I kicked this around with our staff, and I said, "Well, let's get Joseph on to talk a little bit about his luck work and stuff, a little more upbeat, and then we'll get into something that's pretty darn serious and important to talk about because it happens." I wonder, and maybe when we take phone calls next hour, Joseph, how many people have had someone in their life commit suicide. I thank God have not had a personal family member do that, but I have had two friends do that that I've known, and I never saw it coming. And I'll tell you those two right now. One was a sportscaster. His name was Red Jamison, and I worked with him in Detroit, and he got fired and picked up another job at a cable company and got fired. And by that time, I had moved on. I went to Minneapolis. I became a news director in St. Louis. And he was having a very difficult time with his job and career. He started drinking a lot. He called me up one day, and he said, George, I need to borrow $375. No big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, Red, what do you need it for? And he said, I'm going to lose my life insurance policy. I got to make a payment. And it didn't even dawn on me to question that. I just said, sure, I'll get you the money. So I got him the money. I guess he made his policy payment. And then a couple days later, he went into a hotel room and he hung himself.
Yeah,
he was that distraught over his inability to keep a job. And then there was another fellow here in St. Louis. His name was Al Kurth. Came from a very prominent family that had made a lot of money in the banking business. He was a public relations executive, and he killed himself in his office. He shot himself, and he had everything going for himself. He had more money than he needed. He had a nice wife, kids. It made no sense. I mean, in his case, I think he had a medical mental issue, whatever it might be. But when you look at that and then you just try to assess your own life, you say, God, nothing's worth that. No matter how bad things are, it always gets better. Now, the only thing that I would personally say could be acceptable if you ended your life is if you've got like stage four cancer and you're dying, there's no hope, and you're in horrible pain, I can understand why Jack Kevorkian helped assist people.
Mm-hmm.
Would you understand that too?
Yes. I guess, first of all, to have this conversation, I think it's good for us to understand that we should never judge anyone because we don't know what the heck their reason for being on the planet is, how they're doing. I use this story, I think, on another show. My mom could do the New York Times crossword puzzle in ink, you know, never make mistakes. The one thing she didn't want to do was to become losing her mind in terms of Alzheimer's. And
So she did crossword puzzles.
Yeah, you know, she did that. And then when I talked to her on the other side, it was, well, it allowed your dad, who had been married to me for 64 years, learn how to cook and clean, make his own friends, get his own life going. It helped me forget all my religious guilt. And there was all this stuff. There was a plan to it, if you will, bigger than our ego, bigger than what we would know with our conscious mind. My brother, who suicided, it seemed like he came into this life not believing love was real and left knowing love was real. So on a spiritual basis, he made some progress. That said, I think another thing that makes us uneasy about suicide is that, to me, when any of us don't fill our full human potential, in a way we have suicided a little bit of ourselves. You know, we've cut off our potential. We've cut off all we could have been in this life. And so suicide speaks to our shadow. Are we all living fully? Voting for, I think, love over fear is what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Feel deserving of goodness. Many things besides just trying hard to have a successful life. That's from my manifestation work.
Well, then you have someone like Adolf Hitler, assuming he did indeed commit suicide and didn't go, you know, escape off to Brazil or something like a lot of people think, or Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
But assuming he killed himself, he did that because he did not want to be paraded around like somebody in a cage, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so he did it to escape ridicule and everything else, I would guess. What do you think about that?
Again, sure, don't know what was going on in his mind. He may well have been, besides evil, mentally ill by then.
Right. Double whammy.
But a person can have such pride, you know, in his situation, that might be what was going on, that, you know, that it would be intolerable to be shamed or humiliated. You know, there's some traditions in the Eastern cultures sometimes that, you know, certain things are so shameful, you should leave.
Right.
Again, what I found to me to be so powerful was when I began to connect with this, and I did this, I guess we should give the audience a little background. My brother suicided about 25 years ago, and he was a really close friend of mine, as well as good-looking, hard-working, honest, you know, all of that.
And did you see it coming?
I could see him sliding, you know, what you did with the paying the money from that
life insurance
friend. We started, you know, having to give him money to support himself. He was coincidentally in Las Vegas. And what he did the last week was sold his car and prepaid his funeral and things like that. And then I got the call and he had shot himself.
Yeah.
But he put me on this journey of this last 20 years about manifesting a good reality in your life. A burning desire to help people be able to do that, because there had been depression in my family, so I knew a little bit of how tough depression can be. And so 25 years have gone by, and I looked at it and said, look, he's changed my whole life by his suicide in terms of my life direction and helping people create good realities. I wonder what he's been doing. And so I touched base with what he's been doing on the other side for the last 20, 25 years. And that's where I got in touch with, boy, there's a lot of healing ability over there, and that we should not compound the family's grief by thinking now they're lost for eternity. At the same time, George, I'm very sensitive not wanting to encourage suicide. I don't think it's a good option. The suicide hotline in the U.S., I've called a couple times just to see if it works well, because it's a government line, suicide prevention.
Yeah, you got to make sure if it's a government line that it
yeah,
works.
And they answered on the first ring each time, and we're very good. So they're online, and also, if you want, I can give the number over the show here.
Sure.
But the idea would be, could I write a book that would show a much more enlightened idea about suicide and what we know about mental illness and how people can be stressed and distorted in their thinking now and yet not encourage suicide? And I've been happy. The book's been out for a few months now, and I've been getting letters from people saying the book saved their lives. They've been thinking of suicide for a long time.
Well, that's amazing.
And now,
even if you saved one, it's worth it.
Yeah, and now seeing, you know, other people in that same kind of pain, as well as how to overcome the pain while you're here, the book is not just about that. It's also about, you know, what to do to live a fuller life and avoid these kind of things.
Had you not had this personal experience with your brother, do you think you would have written this book?
No. It wouldn't have been, and that's somebody else had died close to me. You know,
right.
You mentioned how many people have known someone. It was weird with this project, as I would go, I made a CD to go with this called Ocean Heart. As I talked to the sound technician, he said, I never tell anybody, but my 15-year-old son committed suicide. Just about everybody had a story. And even some of the reviewers who reviewed the book before it came out said, that was weird, because 2 weeks after I read the book, I had a friend commit suicide, and my whole attitude about it was different since your book.
If you sensed, not just to push your book, but if you sensed somebody was close to suicide, would you give them this book? How would you approach them?
I would. I would approach them first and foremost by being very present for them, giving them a chance to talk freely. I worked as a psychotherapist, you mentioned, for 30 years. a lot of people say to me, you know, toward the end of their treatment even, I would never mention thinking about suicide because I don't want to end up in a mental hospital or everybody think I'm crazy. So just the act of saying, I will listen with respect to how you are feeling is a very powerful thing to do. And not immediately jump into, oh, smile and the world will smile with you or tomorrow will be another day. Listen to how rough it's been from their point of view. And then at some point say, you know, I'd like to be present for you in this. You can call me 2 a.m., 3 a.m., anytime. And I'll be glad to talk to you. And if it's beyond what I can do to get you some resources that could help you. So I'd be very present for the first person. That would be what I would do before even giving them this book, that's for sure.
And what are some of the signs, Joseph, that you see with people that they're close to this? Is it massive depression?
It's a tough one. It can be a person can put on a good act. Often these, you know, in my family, my depression started when I was 5, 6 years old. So I learned how to play act as if everything's fine. So that friend of yours that you mentioned, everything going for them. So it can have no sign to the fact that you do see that they've had a lot of stress lately. They seem to be on a, quote, losing streak, losing jobs, losing relationships.
Losing drugs. It, shouting and stuff like that?
Yeah, alcohol, drugs might be there. There might be anger as they express their frustration. And then you may hear some things like, the world would be better off without me. And thinking gets so distorted, George, that that can be true. My wife's...
Hold on for a second, Joseph. We're already at the break. We'll come back and talk more about the liquid luck and heaven is for healing. And share your stories with us when we come back.